Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Preacher's Forum podcast. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I am coming to you from The Rock, where I live in North Wales, here in the United Kingdom. I am super excited to be bringing you part two of this little mini-series I'm doing on leadership, and that is part of a greater series that I've started four episodes ago called Mind Shift here on the Preacher's Forum podcast. This is all about creating and maintaining a healthy leadership culture. In last week's episode, I talked about the five dysfunctions of a team, which was, of course, taken from Patrick Lencioni's 2012 book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, A Leadership Fable. And this week is the second half of that episode that I started last week. This time we're going to turn the negatives into a positive and talk about the five functions of a team, establishing a healthy leadership culture, and this is part two. And this is all part of my Mind Shift series, as I say, which is really the aim of the Preacher's Forum podcast. It's all about critical thinking, about God, the church, and spirituality. And I would say that the issue of leadership absolutely fits into that aim of critical thinking. These two episodes are not just for leaders of churches. These are aimed at anybody who's either leading a team or if you're part of a team as a member. All right, I just want to take a minute before we get into the five functions of a team and give a couple of quick thank yous to some of the listeners and supporters of the Preacher's Forum podcast. I just want to say a quick thank you to John and Scott of the Holy Heretics podcast for saying some real positive things about the episode that Gary Hayes and I did recently on theoclasm and challenging your views of God. By the way, if you haven't heard that episode, I highly recommend it. I also want to say a big thank you to Gary Hayes for helping me with that podcast. Also to he and Christy Van Hooser for supporting the Preacher's Forum on Patreon. And I'll talk about how you can do that at the end of this program. I want to say thank you to Philip Avery of England and Travis Pinkston of the United States, both of whom said some very encouraging things about the podcast, whether it was on Facebook or Twitter. And I definitely appreciate hearing the feedback. So thank you to our listeners. I would like to say also that if you have found the content of the Preacher's Forum podcast beneficial to you or challenging in any way, I would ask you for a favor as well. If you could take a few minutes and leave a review on iTunes or on Podbean, which of course will help with the visibility of the show. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about how you can get a hold of me on social media a little bit more at the end of this program. All right, let's get back to the topic at hand, which is, of course, our discussion of leadership and the five functions of a team. What is the most important thing that you, as a leader, can be focusing your time, effort, and energy on? The most important thing that you, as a leader, can focus on is the culture of your organization, be it a business, a church, a sporting club, a team, whatever it is. Culture is all about the shared values, the attitudes, the customs, behaviors that a group of people exhibit. And what we all want, I think, really is to be part of a great culture. Isn't that true? A place where you can look forward to coming into work on a Monday morning. Somewhere that's fun, challenging, stimulating. A place that stretches you, helps you to grow and become a better, more complete person. Now, these kind of places and the great cultures that are in those kind of places don't happen by accident. They are achieved when leaders act intentionally to create and maintain them. So while this episode is definitely primarily aimed at leaders of teams, it's also just as relevant for people who are on teams. You can think of it as a critical tool by which to help you evaluate some of the dysfunctions that might be hindering your team from achieving its true potential and the organization that you're supposed to be leading also. So what this episode is going to involve is, first of all, I'm going to take a few minutes and briefly overview the five dysfunctions of a team that I spent more time on last week. And I would encourage you, if you haven't heard last week's episode, go back and listen to that, which is available on Podbean or iTunes. So I'm going to recap that really briefly. And then I want to talk about how to turn the negatives into positives, or the five functions of a team in order to build and create and maintain a healthy leadership culture. Then I want to conclude this episode with some remarks on personal development, personal leadership development, how you can become a better and more effective leader who creates and maintains that healthy culture of the organization that you are tasked with leading. The truth is, John Maxwell, the leadership guru, his statement is that everything rises and falls on leadership. It's absolutely true. So why am I so passionate about the subject of leadership? Well, it's funny, when I was doing my doctoral studies back at the University of Chester, I used to meet up with a friend of mine named Aaron, and it's funny, we always used to talk about, we were both very passionate about the subject of the church and theology and things, and every time we got together, no matter where we started the conversation, we always found ourselves defaulting back to the subject of leadership. What we discovered is the fact that, you know, whatever complaint or issue we had with our local church, it's no use blaming some individual member. It's the policymakers, it's the people in charge, the leaders of that church or that organization, who are ultimately responsible for setting the tone, making the decisions, and creating the culture, be it a healthy or an unhealthy one. We seem to never be able to get away from everything always comes back, as John Maxwell says, it rises and falls on leadership. And leadership, says Matt Ehrlichman in an article on fastcompany.com, he says you can think of it like parenting. You know, kids act just like their parents act. So if the culture of a company or a business stinks, he says, well, then it's the fault of the leaders at the top. Conversely, if the culture is great, then the leadership should be congratulated. And Ehrlichman comments, he says, quote, culture is a normative inheritance, much like child rearing. Kids look and act like their parents, despite how hard they try to do otherwise. The same holds true in your organization. Your leadership is the best indicator of the entire organization, end quote. People may say, you know, I don't want bad leadership. I don't want to be told what to do. Now, I'm not apologizing for the concept of leadership. I believe that we all truly want to work for and with good leaders. Good managers, good leaders can help make us better people. They can help us live up to our fullest potential. They can spur us on to greater growth and maturity. And that's why I began the previous episode, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, with my point about how important it is to focus on the culture of the organization you're meant to be leading. There will always be a culture, and most of the time, if left simply to evolve on its own, it's going to be more often than not dysfunctional in many ways. That's why I say you as a leader, you've got to be intentional about creating and maintaining a healthy culture. Believe me, it's hard work. It's not easy. But with the tools that I'm providing in this episode, and of course with the previous one as well, I want to help you to become a better and more effective leader or a membership of a leadership team. All right, so let's begin first of all by taking a quick look at Lencioni's five dysfunctions by way of a quick overview before we can get into how to turn the five dysfunctions into the five functions. Let's turn the negatives into positives. Let's have a mind shift and learn how you can begin to create and maintain that healthy culture that you'd like to see in your organization. And I just want to say, before I get into this, at the end of this episode, I'm going to be talking about how you can get a hold of me on social media, as well as how you can support the work of the Preachers Forum on Patreon. So stay tuned for that at the end of this episode. All right, so let's take a quick look at Lencioni's model of the five dysfunctions of a team. And basically, these are things that he identified when he went in as a management consultant in various companies and corporations. And over the years, he discovered that a lot of the teams that he was working with exhibited one or more of these dysfunctions. And you can think of his model as a pyramid. Imagine a pyramid that has five levels to it. The broadest one, of course, is at the bottom, and they narrow as they get toward the top. And the first dysfunction is the absence of trust. This is from the essential unwillingness of team members to be vulnerable with each other. And the second level, as it goes up the pyramid, is fear of conflict. And of course, this is because there is an absence of trust, and therefore teams that lack trust, says Lencioni, are incapable of engaging in unfiltered and passionate exchange and debate of ideas. Instead, you have personal attacks. And the third level is a lack of commitment. So when you have an absence of trust and you have a fear of conflict, you're going to ensure eventually that there's low or non-existent levels of commitment by team members. And then the fourth level on his model is the avoidance of accountability. This is when team members hesitate to call out their peers when they engage in counterproductive behavior or actions that are not for the good of the team or the organization as a result. Leaders who turn a blind eye to the problems within the team ultimately allow a toxic and unsafe, unhealthy culture to grow. And the top level, number five on Lencioni's model, the top of the pyramid, is inattention to results. So what you have here is a completely dysfunctional team that doesn't have trust, avoids conflict, doesn't hold each other to account. You have a lack of accountability and ultimately inattention to results. And this is a dysfunctional culture where team members actually put their own agendas and their needs and desires ahead of that which is for the good of the team. And Lencioni concludes this overview by saying that, quote, "And so, like a chain with just one link broken, teamwork deteriorates if even a single dysfunction is allowed to flourish," end quote. And basically what's happening is you have a culture that has been allowed to foster, or fester maybe is the better word for it, and it's an unhealthy, unsafe, toxic environment. And what I'm imagining at this point is you're sitting there thinking, yeah, I've had a job like that. I've worked in places like that. I've worked for people who had teams like that. In fact, my daughter Alexa just the other day was telling us how she works at a hospital up in Sheffield in England, and this woman who was used to be her coworker, who was not a very nice person to work with, just on the same level, pulled some strings and suddenly was promoted, and now she's her boss. And she's very frustrated because this woman doesn't listen to complaints and criticisms, and she only favors her friends. And it's the typical story, isn't it, of a person who's put in leadership who probably has no business being in leadership. And I'm sure we can think of examples of this from our own work history, people that we work with who may have been good at doing their own job, but that doesn't mean that they make good leaders. And I think specifically in churches, this is a real serious problem where we have a lot of people in leadership positions that have no business whatsoever being in leadership. They may be fantastic, wonderful people. I'm not, ripping on them. I'm not tearing them down. I'm just saying they don't necessarily have the qualities of a leader. In fact, I remember at our old church, there was a guy who caused nothing but problems, and he wasn't even a leader, but he had been an elder years before. And I asked him one time, I said, "How did you ever become an elder? You're just such a troublemaker." And he said, "Yeah, well, I used to complain all the time to the guys who were in charge, the elders at the time, and they told me, 'Look, you've got two options, either stop talking or become a leader.'" And so he became a leader, even though he was nothing but a troublemaker. And you have to wonder, how does a guy like that end up becoming a leader of a church, who's nothing more than a troublemaker and a complainer? These are not the qualities of leadership. And this is what I want to talk about a little bit more at the end of this episode as well, the qualities that make up a good, effective leader. But now let's turn our attention to changing those five dysfunctions that Patrick Lencioni identified into the five functions of a team. So let's look at this model. We can think of it the exact same way as a pyramid with five levels ascending broadly at the bottom and getting narrower at the top. So in Patrick Lencioni's dysfunctional team, there was an absence of trust. But in this, it's the exact opposite. The first level is, of course, trust. And this is the trust that's built by team members in humility who are genuinely open to the other teammates about their own mistakes, their weaknesses, their faults and things. And what happens is when the team members open up, and especially the team leader, he or she must model the kind of behavior that he or she would like to see on the team. What happens is by establishing trust, being authentic and open and honest, it builds higher levels of vulnerability-based trust among the members of the team. And that's the most important area to start when you're wanting to establish a good and healthy leadership culture. You've got to have trust. You've got to have a solid foundation of trust. The second level of Lencioni's model was, of course, the absence of conflict. But in this model of the five functions, the second level is conflict. Now, at first glance, you might think, wait a minute, you have a team that's full of conflict. I'm not describing a team that is infighting and degenerating into chaos. What I'm talking about is the engaging in the unfiltered and passionate exchange of ideas. Now, the conflict I'm describing is, as I've said before, it's got to be issue-oriented. It cannot be personal attacks on team members. You know, you can't just say, well, that's a stupid idea. That is not the unfiltered and passionate exchange of ideas. So basically, healthy, unfiltered, issue-oriented conflict, what it does is it helps to weed out potential problems and pitfalls down the road. Because the way this works is you have, let's say, a decision that needs to be made. It's got to be made. There's no way around it. You are the leadership team. You have to make that decision. But there might be some potential problems, some strengths and weaknesses with that particular decision. And when you engage in that passionate and unfiltered exchange of ideas and you tear that decision, you tear that thing apart, you flesh out all the weaknesses as well as the strength, you might be ended up modifying that decision. But in the end, on paper at least, it should be a better decision when it's finally made because you've torn it apart and then you built it back up and made a good decision. And when you have that issue-oriented conflict, and it can become quite heated as long as it's not personal, what happens when the team makes a decision, it can commit. And that's the third level, whereas Patrick Lencioni was, of course, the absence of commitment. And this, we need to flip that around and say, no, we need commitment on the third level. This is when the team is buying into clear decisions, even if it goes against a particular team member's recommendation. Now, this is a hard one. This is really hard sometimes for team members to do, isn't it? But it can be done if that team member who disagrees has authentically been able to share his or her input into the final decision that the team made. In other words, that passionate and unfiltered issue-oriented conflict just mentioned as level two. And this third level of commitment, what happens is it allows team members to feel that, you know what, I'm truly valued. My opinions, my ideas are critically important, even if in the final analysis, the team ended up deciding on a different course of action than the one I personally recommended. And what happens is this level of commitment builds on trust and issue-oriented conflict and commitment, it begins to breed a culture. And this is why I keep coming back to this issue of culture. It breeds a culture whereby team members can take ownership of the final decision that is reached by the team, as I see, even if it goes against your particular recommendations, your desires. I mean, the team member can walk away from that meeting and say to themselves, you know, was it for the good of the organization? That decision that we made, even if I personally disagreed, well, at least I was valued. At least I was heard. I was respected. My opinions were weighed in the final analysis. So basically, yeah, I can get on board with that final decision. I can buy into it. I can support it as well as I can support the ones who are then tasked with implementing that decision throughout the organization. Now, this takes maturity. I have to say, by the way, this absolutely takes maturity. But my assumption is if you are a leader, I would hope that you already have a certain level of maturity. All right, so let's go on to the fourth level then. Whereas in Lencioni's dysfunctional model, it was the lack of accountability. Let's turn the negative into a positive. And so level four is accountability. This is when team members are free and open to call other peers on the team on their actions, on their behaviors that might be counterproductive to the good of the team. And this is regardless of the resulting interpersonal discomfort and the quite natural desire to avoid this kind of sometimes uncomfortable conflict. Now, the same goes for the leader of the team as well. Now, he or she must not seek to avoid accountability or shift the blame to someone else. This is critical. I came across a great quote in a Forbes magazine article. Leadership specialist Mike Myatt says that, quote, "Leaders not accountable to their people will eventually be held accountable by their people," end quote. All right, let's be honest here. The fact is this, isn't it true? Most people, we avoid conflict. None of us enjoys having to confront others when they do something damaging or counterproductive, whether it was to us personally or to somebody else. It's true, isn't it? I don't like it. Most people do not like confrontation. They avoid conflict. Now, to be clear, though, this definition of accountability in my five functional model of a team does not mean personal attacks on other team members. But let's face it, there are times when conflict simply cannot be avoided. We avoid it to our own peril. Now, what I want to say is how that conflict is handled, though, especially by the team leader, because the buck ultimately stops there. That's critically important. Believe it or not, confrontation of counterproductive actions and behaviors of team members, if it's handled in a healthy and productive way, in a context of safety and trust, which is what a good, healthy culture is supposed to be, it can actually lead to amazing personal growth. It can take the team, as well as the individual person, to higher levels of morale and productivity. It's worth pausing for a minute and reflecting about this whole issue of sometimes having to confront people, but it's always for their good. And this is, you know, as a Christian, I would say this is a biblical value. The purpose of church discipline, the purpose of discipline, is always restoration. It's never just to punish people. And this is the idea that, you know, it's really hard to extend people the benefit of the doubt. My wife Lisa was reminding me of this last night when we were talking about this very episode in her experiences as a leader. And she said, you know, you got to think about this. Sometimes there are people who are just absolute jerks. Let's not mince words here. It's just the way it is. Some people are just that way. But most people, she said, honestly, I think that they want to get along with other people. They want to be friendly. They want to be liked and appreciated. But sometimes it's true, and we all admit that this is true, we act out of character. And a lot of times when we blow up in a meeting or we go off on somebody or snap at someone or say some snarky comment, a lot of times it's because of stresses in other areas of our life, isn't it? And you as a leader, you have to give people the benefit of the doubt and you have to extend that grace to them. Recognize it in the long term. Is this the way this person is all the time? Now, if they're always a jerk and angry and a toxic individual pretty much all the time, then you've got yourself a bigger problem on your hands. But when you talk to someone, when you have to confront them about counterproductive behavior, keep in mind that you're always doing it for their benefit, their growth. You need to have their best interests at heart. I mentioned this in my Rock and Roll Soul episodes. I can't remember which one it was, but I talked about when I was a contractor, a builder in the States. I worked with a good friend whose name was Bill Rice, and I really appreciate Bill because I learned more from him in 2 years of working in construction out in the real world than I think I ever did from any Bible college or seminary course on ministry or leadership. And a lot of the things that Bill would do for me in terms of my own personal maturity, he would say to me when I would do something that wasn't very smart on a job site, he would say, "Hey, let's go have a cup of coffee." And we'd go down to the local coffee shop, the local Starbucks, and Bill would just kind of say, "Now, you know, when you said such and such to that homeowner, you know, did you happen to see their reaction to it? You know, and I had said something negative about some work on their house that turned out it was the homeowner who had done it, you know, or something like that. And the thing about Bill was he was very gentle and very loving about the way he did it. But these were things that I really needed to understand because I just wasn't seeing them. It was like a blind spot for me. And it got to the point that every time Bill offered to take me to coffee, I'd start to say, well, what have I done now? You know, but the truth is it helped me to grow. It helped me mature. It helped me become a much more self-aware person of the things that I said and did and the effect that it had on other people. But if it wasn't for Bill's sort of loving kind of fatherly advice and very gentle handling of those situations, I probably wouldn't have listened. And the truth is, the reason I listened to Bill and I took his advice and his wisdom on board was that I knew he had my best interests at heart. He was trying to make me grow and help me to become a better person. And that is really the essence of leadership. And that's why John Maxwell's statement that leadership is influence is such a true statement, because Bill influenced me in a massive, major way, but he didn't do it by confronting me, by belittling me, by making me feel terrible. He did it in a loving, kind way that, as I say, had my best interest at heart. And that's really where you need to be as a leader. All right, so if you really want to be a leader, then you are going to have to face up to the fact that you are going to have to confront people sometimes that are engaging in counterproductive behavior. It's just a fact of life. You cannot duck or avoid that responsibility. Well, you can. And the fact is, a lot of leaders do avoid conflict because they don't like the interpersonal discomfort that comes from having to confront somebody else. So you actually do have a choice. You can avoid conflict, but it'll only contribute to a dysfunctional and unhealthy culture. But how you do it is the critical factor. How should you, as a leader, confront conflicts and problems on your leadership team or with another person that's on your leadership team? One great maxim that I learned when I was an elder, when I was in leadership at the church in Portland, was this. When I had to deal with a lot of conflict, a lot of confrontations, a very toxic and unhealthy person, we came up with this maxim. We said, conflict must be handled right, and it must be handled right away. In other words, we learned the hard way, really, that letting issues go unresolved or by allowing team members to get away with counterproductive, abusive, or damaging behavior to other people, what will happen? Well, it'll destroy morale. It'll hurt the effectiveness of the team. And what'll end up happening is that people on the team will quit in frustration. Because why? They know that they were not protected by the team leader. You know, maybe this has been your experience. It certainly happened to me. There's nothing worse, isn't there, than knowing that the team leader doesn't have your back. That manager or boss won't stand up to others on the team who engage in abusive, hurtful, or counterproductive actions and just turns a blind eye and lets them get away with it. I think people fail to understand, especially those in leadership, that when people act on a team in these counterproductive ways, it has a huge effect on the morale and ultimately the culture of the team and the organization as a whole. I came across a great quote from Neil Kochmuller of azcentral.com. He points out that, quote, a culmination of ongoing poor leadership is high employee turnover. Workers who aren't motivated and are burned out from a poor culture begin looking for other jobs. This further escalates profitability concerns for the business. This downward spiral is often difficult to get out of, since companies struggle when they lose top performers and experienced employees and must replace them with new hires. Even those employees who stay, says Kochmuller, get frustrated at the loss of familiar coworkers and friends, end quote. And this is why I say accountability on the team is so critically important. When I say accountability, I'm not talking about you as a boss holding people's feet to the fire or humiliating them in front of the other team members. No, it's about creating and maintaining that healthy culture where growth, maturity, and all those great and wonderful things can occur. All right, so let's go to the very top level of the pyramid. Whereas in Lencioni's dysfunctional model, it was the lack of attention to results was level number 5. Let's turn the negative into positive. Here we have attention to results. So in other words, we have a team that places the collective goals of the team and the organization above the goals of individual team members. And this, of course, is closely tied to level 4, which is accountability, which means that team members are also held to account for their individual performance. And the fact is, we can't get away from it. Team leaders have got to ask some difficult questions. You have to ask people, look, how well did you do in getting those tasks accomplished last week, last month, last year? You know, the ones we agreed on in the last meeting, the ones you said you were going to do. It's a difficult one because oftentimes what we find out is people on leadership teams, they have hidden agendas, they have desires to see decisions made that benefit them personally or actually in some cases even financially. We see this all the time in the world of politics, for example. One politician may say to another, well, I'll help you get your legislation passed even if I don't agree with it, but of course then you've got to do a favor for me in return. So what's in it for me? In the long run, then, the decision that's made is not necessarily about advancing the good of the country. It's a self-serving decision that's for the good of that particular politician's own political career and ambitions. This is why this top level of commitment is so important, because buying into and keeping as a major focus of the vision and the mission of what the team is all about, as well as that of the organization itself, its own vision and mission, it helps to keep the team on track as a whole in terms of its achievement and traceable levels of achievement. The team can have much higher levels of productivity as well as the organization as a whole, and tasks by the team have a much greater likelihood of being accomplished in a timely fashion and with much better results. All right, so these are the 5 functions of the team. We've turned Lencioni's 5 dysfunctions into 5 functions. So to go back over them real quickly, level 1 is trust, level 2 is conflict, level 3 is commitment, level 4 is accountability, and the top level is attention to results. If you can begin to focus as a leader on establishing those 5 functions of a team, you will begin to create and maintain a healthy leadership culture. Now let's take a few minutes toward the end of this episode to look at some issues of personal leadership development. How can you personally become a better and more effective leader? We need to recall that simply having a title painted on your office door, it may say boss, manager, you might be promoted to executive, whatever level you've achieved, that does not automatically make you a leader. A boss is not necessarily the same thing as a leader. And this is something John Maxwell says, of course. He says leaders are not born, they are made. And a simple definition, really, of a leader is one who has followers. So just you can ask yourself, do you inspire others such that they want to follow you somewhere to achieve some vision of whatever it may be? Then you might just be a leader, or you have the potential to be a leader in the making. And on that level, I just want to mention 2 aspects, 2 critical qualities that I believe are essential for becoming a leader, the type of leader who inspire others, a leader that other people want to follow. It's kind of like, you know, what we're saying is a leader is someone who has followers. If you're not a leader, you can look behind you. If there's nobody following you, then you're just a person out for a walk. And the catalyst for being an effective leader is, first of all, humility. It's the catalyst for the success of any team, of any leader. And I believe that humility is really the key to this whole discussion. Now, why would I say that? Well, think about a person who is not humble, okay? I'm talking about a person, an individual who really sees no need for continued growth, change, forward momentum, increasing maturity, etc. The fact is, pride, unteachability, and ego are really the killers. They are the exact opposite of humility and openness and honesty. You know, and the truth is, if you have individuals on the team or even a team leader who might feel that he or she has already arrived at whatever stage of their life, they say to themselves, you know what, I'm pretty much there. I'm doing pretty good. I've no need to grow or progress forward, whether it be spiritual, personal, maturity, whatever it is. What you're dealing with as a leader, if you have someone like this on your team, you're dealing with an unteachable, prideful person. You know the type of person I'm describing here. I'm talking about sort of that know-it-all who can act very condescendingly toward others, this kind of person who doesn't listen to alternative points of view, won't take advice, or much less act on good advice. Well, what exactly is humility? It's not about thinking of yourself as some kind of a worm, like something that needs to be scraped off the bottom of someone's shoe. Oh, I'm a terrible person. No, it's really about having a modest or realistic conception of yourself and your own abilities, not having too high of an opinion of yourself and being full of yourself. It's about being teachable, open, and honest, really. And that's why leadership guru Jack Welch says, you as a leader, your job is not to have all the right answers, but it's to have all the right questions. Therefore, being a truly humble and open and honest person, it means that you don't come across as having all the arrogance and all the answers for everyone's questions and problems, but it means that you're willing to trust and rely on your team members, your teammates. And that's really the definition of humility. Now, the second critical quality that's essential for becoming a leader who inspires others is credibility. It's what the ancient Greeks called ethos. And credibility is, it's intrinsically linked to a person's character, their personal integrity. Credibility is basically the quality of when your public life and your private life matches up. You're not a hypocrite, in other words, who says one thing publicly but then privately does the exact opposite. Mike Myatt, in his article on Forbes magazine, says, quote, "A leader who lacks character or integrity will not endure the test of time. It doesn't matter how intelligent, affable, persuasive, or savvy a person is, if they're prone to rationalizing unethical behavior based on current or future needs, they will eventually fall prey to their own undoing." And he concludes by saying, "Optics over ethics is not a formula for success," end quote. In other words, it's not about crafting this amazing public image, which is all about optics and how you want people to see you, but that's not really the person who you are inside or in private. That's not a formula for success. The fact is, your character and your credibility is massively important as a leader. The only way that you can earn credibility is to demonstrate faithfulness over a long period of time. And the truth is, we all know that while it may take years to earn credibility among your followers, it can be lost incredibly quickly. I once went to a conference on leadership and I heard a very memorable quote from the keynote speaker. He said, "You can think of leadership kind of as an ATM or a cash machine. You're either making leadership deposits," he said, "or you're making leadership withdrawals." And so basically, when you are prepared for meetings, when you're on top of things, when you are following through and your word actually counts, then you are earning credibility. And when you fail to do those things, when you fail to demonstrate faithfulness, you are making a leadership withdrawal and you are losing your credibility, and it is eroding as a leader. Credibility is intrinsically tied to your character. It's hugely important. I came across a good quote by Charles M. Blow. He stated the effect that a person's character, it's like concrete in a way. He says you can make changes to that concrete when it's first poured, when it's kind of young in effect, but once the concrete is hardened, it's really difficult, if not impossible, to change that person's character. Now, going back to this issue of credibility and earning credibility, there's another way we can think of this in terms of leadership equity. Equity is the value that you build up in a property that you buy as you continue to pay into it. And leaders, in the same way, build what I call leadership equity in their followers. How do they do it? By demonstrating faithfulness, integrity, character, and follow through. So when the leader shows a demonstrated commitment to these things, he or she builds up leadership equity in his or her followers, thereby making those leadership deposits I spoke about. Yeah, okay, occasional mistakes can be made. I mean, we're all imperfect. We all make mistakes. But what happens is, if the leader has enough equity built up, their followers will give them grace. They'll extend some grace. But however, if the leader continues to drop the ball on tasks, you know, there are things like they're late to meetings, they're unprepared for tasks that he or she is supposed to be in charge of, they demonstrate a lack of follow through, they don't get tasks done, a lack of integrity, then you're making those leadership withdrawals. And what will happen in this leadership equity metaphor is at some point the leader is going to be overdrawn. When you make too many leadership withdrawals, you're going to be overdrawn. And there's going to be consequences to that overdraft. And ultimately, a leader who makes too many leadership withdrawals will lose his or her followers and ultimately perhaps their job or their position. So there's some core leadership requirements. This is a critical thing. Leadership is defined as intentionally and humbly influencing individuals to help them achieve a desired mission. Or to look at it another way, again, going back to John Maxwell, he says, leadership is influence. Or Marcus Buckingham says, leadership is leading others into a better future. So really, I say leadership is all about the following issues. It's modeling the behavior that you want to see in others, about being intentional about everything you do, okay, building others up and delegating tasks rather than you doing everything yourself. And really, leading is about helping others to become the person that they are. What are their gifts? What are their passions? And what happens is many people mistakenly believe, you know, you get into leadership and you think, now, wait a minute, if I train others and essentially replace myself, I'm working myself out of a job, I'm eventually not going to have a job. But the reverse is actually true. If you devote yourself to working out of a job, you'll never lack for a job because those kinds of people are so rare. Again, John Maxwell says there is no success without a successor. And there's some core leadership requirements. Some of the things on the outside, what a leader must do for others. Leaders have to consistently demonstrate authenticity, being real, no masks. Leaders have to demonstrate safety, that is, displaying a non-judgmental attitude that accepts others really wherever they are in life. A leader has to have investment. People that follow you know, they have to know that you are willing to invest time, effort, and energy into the lives of others to help them become the best person that they can be. And finally, something you can do for others is communication. Striving for clarity, helping others to evaluate their decisions. You're not telling others what they should think or what they should and shouldn't do, but rather helping them to discover and therefore own their own decisions. And then there's some ins, some things on the inside, what you must do for yourself. You must consistently model humility. That's the attitude that models a need for other people's help and support. You have to model transparency. Freely admitting issues and problems in your life. Don't try to wear a mask. Don't try to hide it. There's also a level of respect for yourself as well as for others. And then there's buy-in, modeling buy-in, demonstrating a commitment to the vision, the mission, and purpose of the organization or the business or church or whatever it is you're leading. And then follow through, building that leadership equity. How do you do that? By finishing tasks, by getting things done in a timely fashion, and all of these establish your credibility. These are making leadership deposits. All of these ins and outs require one core value, and again, that is humility. Without humility, none of these leadership requirements can be met by those in leadership. And this is why I'm saying that it's critically important not to put people in leadership positions who are not leaders. Ideally, we should never put someone in leadership who's not a leader. We shouldn't put people in leadership who's not humble, a person who sees no reason to engage in that continuing ongoing process of becoming a more effective and a better leader. We shouldn't put people in leadership who thinks, you know what, I'm entitled to it. I've earned it. I deserve this. I want to be a leader. I want to gain a title. I want to gain a position. You know, why is it important? Because the organization as a whole is going to suffer, and the team is going to suffer if people who are not leaders are put into positions of leadership. It's one of the worst things that people in leadership can do is to promote people into positions that they are really not ready for or not qualified for. And again, we see this a lot, unfortunately, in the church, where there are a lot of people, good, well-meaning, sincere people, but they are just not qualified to be leaders and pastors. And unfortunately, a lot of damage can result when you promote people, when you put people in positions of leadership who are not qualified and who really should not be there. And the fact is, you don't have to be apologetic about not promoting someone, about not putting someone in a position of leadership who really is not a leader. And it will help ultimately with this issue of creating and maintaining a healthy culture. If what you're doing is constantly battling with people who aren't leaders, then you're not being able to focus on the really important issues, which is raising up other leaders and creating and maintaining a healthy culture. Well, I hope this episode has been helpful for you. I hope it's been a good critical tool for you to begin to evaluate the health, the culture of your organization, whatever that organization might be, whether you're a leader of a team or a member on a leadership team, or maybe someone who aspires to leadership. Hopefully this has helped you to think through some of the issues and clarify what are really important things versus perhaps some other things that are less important. And maybe it's challenged you as well to become a better and more effective leader and given you a little bit of a pathway to go down in that regard. If it's helped you or challenged you, I would love to hear from you. You can always contact me on a variety of social media platforms. You can contact me on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at Preachers Forum. You can find me as well on Instagram at Preachers Forum. You can always send me an email, preachersforum@gmail.com, or stop by and like my Facebook page, facebook.com/The Preachers Forum. You can also have a look on my website where there's a lot of resources as well as my earlier podcast episodes on various topics. preachersforum.com. And finally, if you are interested in helping to support the work of the Preachers Forum podcast, help me cover things like podcast hosting, equipment, and all kinds of other expenses, travel expenses to go interview people and more, then you can go to patreon.com/preachersforum. And there you will find more information on the vision of the Preachers Forum, which is all about critical thinking about God, the church, and spirituality. And in this case, I would also have to add leadership, which is critically important because the fact is there's just so much bad leadership out there, isn't there? So once again, I've been your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. Thank you for joining me for this episode of The 5 Functions of a Team, Establishing a Healthy Leadership Culture, as part of this Mind Shift series of podcasts that I'm doing on the Preachers Forum podcast. Be sure and join me next Friday for an incredibly powerful episode. I have a conversation with a former student of mine, Jean Dobson, that I recorded up in Liverpool, and she talks about a major mind shift, learning how to cope and survive multiple sexual abuse. This is an unbelievably powerful story. You are not going to want to miss my conversation with Jean Dobson next Friday, right here on the Preachers Forum podcast.